if you caught the first episode of a new reality TV series on the ABC, The Dream House. It's on Thursday nights at 9:30. It's a story of three young people with intellectual disabilities who have moved in together. And of course, one of the toughest challenges for parents of adult children with a disability is finding good quality, independent accommodation when they're ready for it. There's a real shortage of appropriate housing and long, long waiting lists for what's there. And even if you do find a place, letting go as a parent after a life of intensive caring can be pretty hard to do. And it's perhaps serendipity that this series premiered in the same week that the very, very difficult story of baby Gammy came to light, a boy with Down syndrome left behind with his surrogate mother in Thailand. Two very, very different stories of the capacity of a person with Down syndrome to live a good quality, independent life. And we're wondering if Dream House offers an effective housing model for young adults with an intellectual disability. I'm joined this morning by Celia Tait, executive producer of The Dream House. She's with the Artemis, I think it is. She'll correct me on that, international production company. Margaret Marshall is joining us too. She's mother of 32-year-old Justin in the series. I hope one day I get to meet Justin too. And Professor Christine Bigby is with us, leader of the Living with Disability Research Group at La Trobe University. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you. Morning.
And Christine, I'll start with you. This decision to move out of home, it's a really big decision for both young people and their parents. What styles of accommodation are available for people at the moment with intellectual disabilities?
The problem is at the moment there's actually very little available when people want to move out of home. It's often not available until there's a crisis and people really have to move out of home. But the most common model at the moment has been small supported shared housing in terms of group homes. There's about 17,000 people who live in a group home in Australia. That's been the most common model. But the growing model is around supported living, which separates the housing from the support. Support, which enables people to rent or own their own house, to share or to live individually and have a support that's tailored to their needs when they need it, and support that can be individualised and support that can change as their needs change.
Is that growing? Is that becoming more an option that more people are taking up with the right sort of support?
It will be hopefully an option that will grow exponentially as the NDIS takes off, and we've already seen it growing as particularly Victoria has begun to have individualised support packages which enable people to have a package of support, and then they need to find housing to live in to go with that support. And that's been one of the real blockages to the growth of this development, is the availability of affordable housing for rent, which, as you know, is very expensive, and there's often discrimination against people with disabilities when they do look to rent.
In the private rental market. Because ultimately, and I imagine there would be a lot of debate about this amongst parents and their young people, their children, what would be the ultimate goal here? Is it about getting people in the private rental market sort of environment, a house in a suburban street, part of a community, rather than hived away?
The ultimate goal is inclusion in and participation in the community, and that means living and having the breadth of choice that other people have, either living on your own or with friends or with a partner. It has to be the choice. That's the most important thing, of what suits the person and their particular situation, and maybe trying different options. But the important thing too is that We shouldn't segregate people. So we know from the research that if you congregate more than sort of 8 or 9 people with disabilities together, then that begins to set up a segregation which gets in the way of community inclusion. So we need to pay attention to the size and the design of the type of supported living situations we're creating.
From the observations that you've made in your research, how well do group homes work? Because they do exist now, and that they are a choice that a lot of people end up making. Do they work optimally?
I think it's probably not quite true to say it's a choice. It's often the only option that's been available. And our research shows that there's enormous variability. Some of them work really well, and some of them don't work so well. And our analysis of that is it's not about the model. It's about the quality of the support that people get. The skilled support and the leadership of that support. It's the direct support workers and their practice that makes an enormous difference.
Celia,
so you can have a really good model of housing, but if you don't have good skilled support, then it's going to fail. People can be very isolated living in supported living situations on their own in the community if they're not getting the right support to participate.
Yes. Now, Celia, you created a group home for this series for three young people.
Actually, I should just correct you there, because it's really not a group home created.
Well, it's a share house environment. What were you trying to do that was unique here? And it's not without controversy what you were trying to achieve, a reality TV series, effectively.
Well, yes, I think we had a lot of things to think about very carefully. I mean, first and foremost, we wanted to create television that had at the forefront the point of view of some wonderful young adults and their perspectives on life, which is rarely seen on television, and as we know is a world full of colour, full of heart and warmth, full of intelligence, and that was first and foremost. And then we thought, well, we know lots of people who are young adults who would love to live away from their parents. They're at the stage where they would love to move on. Can we do something useful? So not just make television, but actually do something that might have a wonderfully long-term impact on their lives. So the idea of finding a way for them to share a home, if that's what they wanted, we found people who were at the stage of life where they didn't want to live by themselves. They wanted to, like a lot of their siblings had done, flat share. So we found a house that's not really run by any service provider. It's owned by a city of Subiaco, and it's run by a housing foundation. But it was up to us to try and work out what support would be in place in order to support the housemates, as we've called them, as they call themselves. And so we really consulted with many people in the industry, and I'm not sure you can really define the model of the dream house. I absolutely agree that it's about the quality of support, the type of support, how the support workers interact. And at the heart of it, it's about, the personal choices of Justin Kirk and Sarah. So listening to them, how they wanted their lives to be, how they wanted their home to be run, and starting with them, and then creating an environment and supports that suited both them and also had the backing of their families, very importantly, because their families are still very involved in their lives. Although they don't live in the same structure anymore, they've moved on, their families are still very much involved and want to be involved.
And well, I want to hear more about Kirk, Sarah and Justin, but this comes from a personal place for you too, doesn't it?
It does, because I've been very lucky to have my stepson in my life. The last 21 years I've been his carer, although in fact he has, he's left the nest. And I went through that journey with my husband quite a few years ago, and it's still ongoing. And I think that's the other thing to say, is that it is about trying different options. It is about having, for people, all of us in our lives go through different stages where at one stage in life we might like to live by ourselves, other stage in life we might like to flat share with friends, we might like to stay with siblings, we might like to, marry and then have children, then there's the empty nest at the other end. So living arrangements, I think, are invariably organic. And so that's something to bear in mind for people with disabilities too. They are no different from us in that respect.
But the premise for this series is that you track Kirk, who's 21, he lives with autism. You track Sarah, who's 24, who lives with Down syndrome and a vision impairment, and Justin, who's 32, with Down syndrome,
yes,
over a period of weeks, don't you?
We do, and we follow them for 10 weeks, and we actually finished filming a year ago now, and I'm very pleased to say that the house is still up and running, and you'll have to wait and watch the final episode to see what happens.
That's good news, isn't it?
It's absolutely wonderful, yeah.
I'll come back to you, Celia, about some of the other questions that this project raised, but let's bring in Margaret Marshall, mother of Justin, who clearly isn't 32 anymore. He's probably about 34. Margaret, Justin's a real star in this series, and just tell us about the decision that you took and he took to be included in this series.
Well, actually, Justin's 33.
Okay.
Well, originally, way back, we had thought that for Justin's future that we would just buy a unit somewhere in the community and he would learn to live independently and just be, you know, part of the inner suburban street and live like that. But then I started worrying about the isolation aspect of it, because he's always had a lot of action around him, he's my firstborn, and then I had three daughters after him, so we've had a busy household, and just the thought of him sitting on his own, eating dinner on his own, watching TV on his own, I'd started to think, no, maybe that's not such a good idea. Mm. And so when he was 22, we joined a housing group, which was sort of a lobby group to find looking for accommodation for our children. There were about 10 families in the group who, similar to Justin, was an intellectual, had a son or a daughter with an intellectual disability. And one of the fathers had said that he thinks that our children should move out of home by the time should have moved out of home by the time they're 25. And I remember thinking, oh, that's good. We've got 3 years up our sleeve. You know, that's cool. Well.
What was the vision? What was the vision of the group?
Well, this is what we were going to do. The council, Subiaco Council, actually offered us some land, and we were going to build 14 units on this piece of land, like 8 for our children and 6 for social housing. It was all going to be together in a sort of like a complex with a couple of bed sitters for some of the children had higher needs than our children. So we're going to have a full-time carer that lived on the premises to look after these two that needed more care, but would also oversee the others, like make sure that Justin got up in the morning and came home from work in the afternoon, that sort of thing, because he just needed sort of minimal sort of support. And we had the plans drawn up and were trying to get ahead, but plenty of obstacles and barriers and hurdles came along, and it didn't actually get off the ground, and it was an ongoing case of one step forward and two backwards. But we persevered, having a meeting once a month for 10 years.
Because this is a desperate quest, isn't it? You need to know that Justin can find his way in the world, independent of you.
Yes.
And he needs to know that too.
Well, that's right. And although if something happened to my husband and I and we hadn't set him up in anything, at least we know that he had his three sisters that would rally around and, you know, help him find accommodation and sort that out. But the thing was, I didn't want to have them burdened with that responsibility, because I wanted to have him established. And also at 33, early 30s, you know, it was time he moved out of home. I didn't want him still living at home when he's 45, still, you know, being... you know, sort of living like he was when he was at school. So anyway, in the meantime, some of the parents in our housing group have found alternative housing along the way, and others are still their offspring is still living at home in the family home. So anyway, one day I was approached by Artemis asking if we were interested in Justin taking part in this dream house project. And one of the draw cards was that if it worked out, he could stay on in the house. So it wasn't just a matter of 10 weeks to filming, learning to be independent, and then back home living how he was beforehand.
And so that actually happened. You took that offer up. And I'm wondering if you had some hesitations and what that process has been like for him. Because, you know, it's not a one-size-fits-all story, this, is it? You know, some people are going to cope differently in a share house with other people with intellectual disabilities. And then there are, you know, and in different circumstances, parents will have quite a lot of anxieties around that, and the different sort of personal boundaries that people might have, and learning those skills, as we all have to learn.
Yes, well, we didn't know Kirk. I knew Sarah Britton vaguely from a couple of sort of recreation clubs that Justin had been going to, but didn't really know her that well, but, you know, knew her well enough to say hello and have a bit of a chat to her mother. But Kirk, I hadn't met at all. But I did know Celia as well, because her stepson was in the same class as Justin at Christchurch Grammar.
Sure.
And I knew what Celia was like. I knew that she would handle it very sensitively and not sort of a big brother scenario. So
how did he go? How did he go? How has he gone? I mean, we won't give it all away because it is a series, of course, but just in terms of your sense as a mother.
It has been absolutely fantastic. I must say, I didn't have reservations at all at the beginning, but I did have that that emotional turmoil, as you saw in last week's episode, when I think I cried all day the day after he moved out. And luckily, I stopped, I think, on the Thursday, but I thought I was going to be crying for the rest of my life. But then things started falling into place, and he's enjoyed every minute of it. Still is enjoying every minute of it.
Celia Tate, I'll come back to Celia. Celia,
sorry.
We've only got a few more minutes left, and I'm just keen to know what sort of supports you did put in place as executive producer of this series.
Well, at the heart of it, we have some very qualified people. So we work with Jeff Potter and Cindy Wyman from the Centre for Applied Behaviour, and also Gordon Truen and his team from Nelson. So they're operating in the industry. We talk to many families as well as other people in the industry. And one of the things we did do was find a whole bunch of very, very talented and gorgeous, same age, voluntary help, who we called the Buddies. And they are all involved in working in the field. Some of them are training and some of them are working in the industry. But they all wanted to volunteer their support, their friendship, and because they knew it could be life-changing for the housemates, as it has been. And what's really nice is that a few of them have stayed on in the lives of Justin, Sarah and Kirk.
How terrific.
And one of them has moved into the house. I've given a bit of the story away.
Yes, don't give that away, because that's it. But Professor Christine Bigby, final comment to you. In your analysis of what works and what doesn't, what's your impression of this as a model beyond the television?
I think it's a great model. It has potential for change, I think, as will unfold in the series. But the important underlying thing is the choice that you can choose who you want to live with, rather than being put together because that's what your parents think, or because parents know each other. It's got to be up to the people themselves to choose who they live with or to try out living with other people. But there are other models too, where something called the network, the keyring networks that we have in Victoria, where a number of people live in share houses and are linked together by a support worker who helps them integrate into the community. And there's a lead tenant model where one person might live with somebody without a disability and they get free rent in return for providing support to help the person manage bills and the things that they find difficulties with. Mm. So I think we're just on the verge of exploring a whole range of innovative models based on the sort of principles of person-centeredness, which are about, you know, choice and responsiveness. Yes. And individualised options.
And an interesting debate happening on our Facebook page about all this from the perspective of parents, as no doubt this series will generate. And but what's compelling are these three stars and their efforts to make it work. So I thank you both, all of you, for joining us. Margaret Marshall, thanks, and thanks on Justin's behalf too. And Professor Christine Bigby, Living with Disability Deputy Chair, Leader of the Living with Disability Research Group at La Trobe University, and Celia Tate, Executive Producer of the series The Dream House. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And the series, you can catch it tonight, Episode 2, 9:30 on ABC Television. And you're with ABC RN.